It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey guys, welcome back to Money for Lunch. We are excited to have you here. We are constantly grateful and thankful and delighted that you guys choose to tune us in and download our radio show. It is absolutely wonderful. We are now one of the top rated shows on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks to you. We appreciate that very, very much. And also delighted to tell you that I've been, invited to publish for LinkedIn.com, so that's exciting. You'll see more of me there. And I hope that you'll reach out to me and connect with me on LinkedIn under my name, Bert Martinez. Love to connect with you there, talk to you about business, and see how we can help promote each other in this crazy, crazy world we call business. Anyway, guys, we are going to listen in to an interview I did with Bill Bartman a while back. And this is one of my favorite interviews. I play it all the time because I think it really helps a lot of people out. Every single time that I play this interview, I get all sorts of great feedback, and it helps you out, it gets you thinking about your debt, and I want you to, you know, listen in to my good friend Bill Bartman, and then I'll be right back.
And we're going to be talking to Mr. Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman is a highly recognized and awarded businessman, and he's got a very interesting story. I want you guys to listen to this. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, Bert, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, Bill, I know a lot of our listeners may not have heard your story, so before we get into it, and we're going to be talking about how to get out of credit card debt quickly, but before we get to that, give us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your story.
Well, certainly, and I guess we could start with the old standard rags to riches, but everybody's heard those stories so many times, they're almost like chopped liver anymore. So we don't call mine rags to riches, more like rats to riches. We grew up in a neighborhood where there were more rats per capita than there were people. But from there, fortunately, even though I was a high school dropout, spent 5.5 years in high school, I was an alcoholic by the time I was 17, I'm essentially deaf and wear hearing aids to hear about half of what goes on around about me, and grew up on welfare and poverty, and left home when I was 14. I managed to finally get my boat righted, as they would call it, and honestly, Bert, it happened because I met the woman of my life, the lady I met when I was 14 and she was 11. We dated for 10 years, and we've been married now for 36, and I give her all the credit in the world for kicking my rump, so to speak, back to the system. I got a GED. With my GED, I managed to get into college on probation, graduated on probation 4 years later, got into law school on probation, flunked out, got back in, finally graduated on probation, and with that, where Kathy and I have, over the course of our life, we've been blessed and fortunate that we've been able to have some pretty significant business success. In 1986, we went broke. I live in Oklahoma, and we were in the oil and gas business, and the price of oil went from $40 a barrel down to $14, and we went flat, bankrupt, broke, and from there, we saw an opportunity, the same opportunity that's going on right now. We saw the economy being in the tank. We saw people being, massive numbers of people being unemployed and banks failing. And so we started buying bad debt. We started buying charged-off credit cards for literally a nickel on the dollar. And with that, over the next 12 years, we created a billion-dollar company. Kathy and I became the 25th wealthiest people in America, members of the Forbes 400. And fortunately, we have won a whole list of business awards, none of which will buy you a cup of coffee anywhere, but they're real pretty when they hang on the wall.
Well, you know, it's good to be recognized by your peers. I think it does say a little bit, but you're right. When it comes down to it, it doesn't buy a cup of coffee. So tell us, Bill, you went from literally from rats to riches, as you like to say. You've been married to Kathy for 36 years?
36, yeah, which means she had to get a Purple Heart or something.
That's right. Well, you know, I think it's kind of cool that you give her all the credit. That is an amazing thing, how women can affect us.
Absolutely, Bert. You know, and it's so understated. I mean, you know, the old adage of behind every successful man, there's a woman. Well, that is so much baloney. Kathy has never been behind me. She's never been in front of me. She's always been alongside of me. And people who have great relationships, those are the ones who more often than not are the ones who are great successes in life. So isn't there a lesson there? You know, get a relationship, keep a relationship, work a relationship, and then maybe the rest of your life will fall in place.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's very difficult to have success outside if you're not having success inside the home.
Oh, amen. Absolutely.
All right, well, let's get to it. Tell us about how to get out of credit card debt quickly.
Well, here is the quickest way possible, and it kind of rubs against the norm, and I don't want people to think I'm preaching some kind of financial anarchy or something when I tell them that, but remember now, the business that we created was buying charged-off credit cards, and we bought 4.5 million individual accounts, so I have some background here. What I'm suggesting, for people who are so far underwater that they can't see out, and, you know, that has a different definition for different people, but if you look at your own finances and say, at the job I have right now, at the way things are going, I am so far in. It doesn't matter how you got there. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. But if that's where you're at, you have to look at some pretty extraordinary situations to get out of the hole you're in. And one of the things you can do is, and here it comes, quit paying your credit card bills. Now, when you quit paying your credit card bills, it will hurt your credit rating. Oh, boy, there it is almost an immediate thing. But the truth of the matter is, Bert, if somebody's that far upside down, they already have hurt their own credit rating. And so one more little ding on it isn't probably going to make a big difference to them. Now, conversely, if your credit is good, you'd never want to do this. But if your credit's already been shot, if you quit paying your credit card bills, here's what happens. And you will get some phone calls. You'll get collectors calling you. But if you just keep saying no, after 180 days, the credit card company, the bank, has to charge off the debt. That's a rule. That's a law, actually. That's a GAAP accounting rule. And the bank will charge off the debt and then sells those loans, those credit card debts, for as low as a nickel on the dollar to people like me. And when we buy them for a nickel on the dollar, we call up the same customer and we're prepared to settle for, you know, 15 cents on the dollar. So a person who is, say, $10,000 in debt on their credit card right now and can't pay the 10 grand because they just don't have it, they might be able to settle with somebody for, say, $1,500. And the problem is the bank won't let them settle with the bank for $1,500. So that's the one thing they can do is nothing. Don't pay your bills. And if you don't pay your bills, eventually they will be sold off to someone else who will settle with you for pennies on the dollar.
Well, that's a great strategy. It's kind of like reverse leverage.
It is exactly that. You know, it's kind of the one step short of bankruptcy. You know, when you file bankruptcy because you're so far in you can't get back out, you know you're going to hurt your credit, but you also know you're going to effectuate a solution. You know you're going to make a whole bunch of that junk go away. Well, this is a half step. Now, it's certainly right in line with going bankrupt because it's heading down that path, but it may be the one thing that keeps you from filing bankruptcy. And it would be better to have one or two creditors messing up your credit score as wiping out all of them.
Right. Typically, bankruptcy, and I know the bankruptcy law has changed, and maybe you don't know the answer, but typically bankruptcy tends to stay on your credit for, what is it now, 7 or 10 years?
It is as long as 10 years that it will continue to show up or haunt you, as they say. And yes, I'm familiar with that. In 1986, we filed bankruptcy. So I know again from experience that is the last straw, last resort, and I don't encourage people to do it unless they just absolutely can't take care of their family, can't take care of their other obligations. There is a higher sense of order here, and that's why the bankruptcy rules were created. You know, not for just to let people run up bills and just say, oh, the heck with it, I'll just walk away from it. No, it's for good, honest, serious, legitimate people who find themselves in a place they never would have imagined.
Sure. And you know, the thing that you just hit on there that people don't realize is that when you start believing that it'll never happen to you, that's when it happens to you.
Oh, and right now, Bert, it's happening to people who have never, ever imagined it could happen to them. See, in the old days, a few years ago, we used to think that people with credit card problems and the people who would think about bankruptcy, well, those are, you know, we would kind of put them in that, well, they must be lazy or they must not have gotten a good education or they probably didn't work very hard. And we kind of put them all in a little category, rightly or wrongly. That's kind of the way we do things. But this time around, in this great recession we're in right now, there are people who did it by the rules. They went to school, they studied hard, they got good grades, they went and got a job, they showed up for work every single day of their life, they went and bought a house with a white picket fence, they married the girl next door, they followed every single rule to follow the American dream, and it turned out that maybe some of that wasn't as true as they told us. And now these are people who have never failed before, have never had difficulties before, and now they're unemployed and not able to pay their bills.
You know, something that you just brought up, I think that this generation is one of those generations that hasn't been tested. This economy is their first test.
It is indeed, and I feel so bad for the people going through what they're going through right now. Now, a guy like me, I'm 61 years old, and I have failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded, and I have screwed up so many times it's almost pathetic. I'm good at failure. I'm good at screwing up. I'm good at getting knocked down and figuring out how to get back up because I've done it a lot. Now, people who have never had it happen to them, it is the most traumatic thing they may experience in their entire lifetime. And quite frankly, some of them may not know how to deal with it.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is failure is a good way to succeed.
It is the only way to succeed. And here's a challenge I give everybody on this call. The Forbes 400 is a list that's published every October by Forbes magazine, so you can go online and get it or wherever you might choose to read it. And read the stories of the people who are on the Forbes 400 list. And except for a few people who inherited some money, and there's usually a handful of them on there, the ones who are self-made, every one of them failed at least once. Some of them failed a half a dozen times. Some of them have filed bankruptcy three or four times in their life. And that's what it almost takes failure to succeed.
Well, you know, Walt Disney, I believe, filed bankruptcy four
Indeed.
Or five times.
Indeed.
And on top of that, his best friend, which is the famous Art Linkletter, you know, gave up on him, wouldn't lend him the $1,000 he needed to buy what is now Walt Disney in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm. No, the stories are, you know, I mean, they're by the thousands. So, you know, when I started, I'm a student of this industry because I try to share what it is I've learned along the way. The very reason you and I are on this call today is hoping that maybe somebody will hear something that might have some value in their life. Well, I began looking at all of the reasons people succeed and the reasons people fail, and I found an awful lot of correlation between having failed and learning a lesson and then going to a much higher success than you ever would have been able to go to but for the failure.
Absolutely. Bill Bartman, thank you very much. This is Bert Martinez. Thank you.
And Bert, you're very welcome. Have a great day.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick.
Oh, yeah.
Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. I just love hanging out with Bill Bartman. I think that, you know, what he said is so kind of cool. You know, he's been around a long time, so he's gotten over screwing up and making mistakes and rebounding from that. So that's kind of a great attitude to have. And I think that I think the earlier we can have that attitude, the better we all have a happier, better life. Anyway, enough of that. My next guest, I think you guys are going to be interested to hear from my next guest. I'm certainly excited to have him on the show, Steve Thompson. He's the general manager for Uber Arizona. And you can check out and find out more about Uber at uber.com. That's uber.com. And anyway, as I was saying, he's the general manager for Uber Arizona, overseeing Uber's operations in the Phoenix and Tucson markets. For those of you who don't know, Uber is a free mobile app on your smartphone that lets you order, track, pay, rate, and connect directly with drivers whenever you need a ride. Uber's technology company started in 2010 out of San Francisco and is now in over 80 markets across the world, likely coming to a city near you very soon. And I'm going to throw this in there. I've used Uber multiple times, and it rocks. This is just a smart way of using technology, and it's helping a lot of people make money. It's helping a lot of people save money. Check out uber.com. Steve Thompson, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so why don't you tell us real quick, what is Uber and how it works?
Absolutely. So for those of you that don't know, Uber is an app on your phone. It's as simple as going to your app store on your Android or iPhone, downloading the free app, putting in some of your information, and then you can request a ride in almost any city across the world. We're on all six continents, and we're expanding like crazy. So it's very simple to open up your app. You can see where cars are located in real time. You're able to then set your pickup location, get a fare estimate, order your ride, and you get to see your driver's photo, name, vehicle make, and model number. You can track them street by street as they're heading to you, so you know exactly where they are. It's really the most convenient way to get from point A to point B, and also the safest because your credit card information is stored in the app, so you never exchange cash or credit. When you're done with your ride, you get to rate your driver as well. So then that way the entire marketplace or network has a continuous rating system, so everybody can feel as safe as possible. So it's really an incredible technology that we're excited to have here in Arizona and across the world.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think it's fantastic. And I have to ask you, though, you must, not you personally, but Uber must upset a lot of the taxi companies when you guys come into a city. I'm sure that you guys have gotten some resistance, right?
Yeah, well, you know, the transportation industry really hasn't been innovated on in decades. So when
right.
Uber comes in and solves this problem of how to get from point A to point B using innovative technology, not just as a dispatch tool, because Uber is not a dispatch tool. It's truly a marketplace in which individuals can connect with drivers in real time when they need it. And drivers are able to have complete flexibility of when they work, how often they work. You know, they're independent contractors. They own their own vehicles. They're not employees of ours. So they truly have the full freedom to make as much money as they need, which enables individuals to get from point A to point B when they need it. So it's really an incredible marketplace that, you know, is new. It's innovative. And we definitely do get some resistance from traditional taxi that just wants the industry to stay as it is. But as we know, technology pushes a lot of things forward, and it makes things much better. So that's why Uber exists, and we're excited to continue providing something that riders love very enthusiastically
right.
in a number of different media channels, and drivers love as well. So that's what the beautiful thing about Uber is we satisfy kind of the supply and demand on that.
Sure. You know, and bottom line is when you guys check out Uber.com and you start using this, it's like a no-brainer. It's one of those great technologies that once you see it and you understand it, you go, wow, why wasn't the taxi transportation industry doing this years ago, right? It's a no-brainer that nobody thought of.
Yeah, it's something that I beat myself up over that I didn't think of this, and Travis, our CEO, did. But thankfully, I can enjoy some of the benefits of what Uber has to bring in terms of having it in Phoenix and having it in Tucson, as well as a number of other cities across the world. But, yeah, every time I talk to somebody, they always look at me and they're like, that's such a great idea. Why didn't I come up with that? But thankfully it exists and everyone can download it and use it. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so what are some kind of things about Uber that people might not know about?
So, you know, Uber is not just, you know, a way that you can get from point A to point B. There's actually a lot of really great features that people might not be aware of. One of them, something that I've never been able to do with a traditional taxi, is actually estimate fares before you ever get in the ride. So before you even request, you can put in a fare estimate and know exactly how much it might cost you in terms of a relative range. And if there's any discrepancy where someone took the wrong freeway or, you know, they took a longer route than you expected, the beautiful thing about Uber is we have a support team behind it that is able to adjust those fares in real time, make sure not just drivers but also riders are being paid attention to, and all of their concerns are being paid attention to. So the support system is great. One thing that I love is fare split. So if you have friends that also have Uber on their phone, you don't have to be the person that always pays for the Uber, because you can invite your friends to split your fares with you. So then that way, you know, a $20 ride can easily become a $5 ride. And in addition, one of the things that I love that I think not a lot of people know about is you can actually earn free rides and free credit by sharing Uber with your friends, which myself as a marketer is just a brilliant idea in terms of referral marketing, being able to share your unique promo code that's inside of the app on the top corner. You hit down and you can hit the promotion option, and you can promote your code to all of your friends, which is really great. So those are all kind of cool features of how we continue to make Uber better, faster, stronger, and also continue to grow the Uber brand across the world.
Yeah, you know what, and let me just tell you, I had a phenomenal Uber experience in San Diego, California, and one of the things that I like about Uber real quick is that you guys – you have this thing called Uber X, and then you have the black car. So if you want to, if you're maybe going on a date or a bit, maybe you want to do something a little bit more upscale, you can get somebody to pick you up in a black car, and this is what I did up there in San Diego. The driver of this car, just a phenomenal guy, ended up, he's just a real networker. I mean, we started talking. He was very friendly. And so I ended up using him a couple of times. But what's so funny is he kept introducing me to other people that he had given rides to that were also attending this conference that we were in. And so we were able, because of this Uber driver, actually make a deal and connect because of his networking ability. It was just another really cool thing. Every Uber driver that I have experienced thus far has this thing that most taxi drivers don't, and that is people skills. You know, they make the experience that much better, as opposed to the average taxi driver where they don't talk to you, they don't smile, they just seem to, they treat you like an object, right? They put you in the cab, they drop you off, and they speak as little as possible to you. Uber is really a completely different experience. At least the ones that I have experienced have just been delightful.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the innovation on this industry that people forget about is, with the traditional taxi system or limo livery system, these drivers are, leasing a vehicle from whatever company that is, and they're just trying to make as much money to pay off that daily or weekly lease fee. So for them, they're trying to hustle as quickly as they can, get you from point A to point B, and just get you out so they can pick up the next fare. And with Uber, these individuals, they have similar costs, but they're their own vehicles. So they're not as concerned about paying off the lease to someone else. But the marketplace that Uber creates is one in which the driver gets to rate the rider and the rider gets to rate the driver. So the driver wants to aim to provide the highest quality experience possible. And part of that is just carrying a conversation with the person because, it's a very unique world of Uber users, both on the rider and driver side, because even though we might feel like Uber's everywhere, there's still a lot of people that don't know it. So you're kind of part of this really cool group that knows the technology and is using the system. And so when you can connect with each other inside the car and share stories with each other of why you love Uber, that's one of my favorite parts of using Uber, is just talking with these drivers, getting to hear their stories about how Uber has provided them with more flexibility, more freedom, more opportunity to spend time with their family, and more money in their pockets. That's the great thing about the Uber system, especially on the rating system, of being able to provide the highest quality experience every time.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. Okay, so let's talk about what's happening in Arizona. How long have you been? What is it? How is Uber doing in Arizona?
Yeah, so well, we're excited, actually. You said 80-plus cities, and that was my – we actually just launched our 100th city today. So if you want to check out some of the other cool cities that we have, you can go to uber.com/100, just the number 100. But in terms of Arizona, Arizona was one of the early markets. Phoenix launched, I believe, one of the first 20 cities in November of 2012, and we've just grown like crazy. For those of you that know the Phoenix Metro, it is a very large, very expansive, and we cover almost every area of it, which is a pretty incredible feat when you look at how large Phoenix is. And Tucson is doing great as well. You know, not just U of A students love it, but there's so much new development and exciting entrepreneurial development going on in Tucson, and we're excited to be a part of that as well. So Uber Arizona is it's great to see that two cities out of the 100 cities that we're in globally are Arizona cities. As an Arizonan, that makes me pretty proud. So we're excited to continue growing across the state and hopefully into some rural areas like Flagstaff and Sedona and other places that some of your listeners might be familiar with if they're taking some summer vacation. So.
Yeah, and you know what? The other thing is that what's so cool about Uber, though, that I specifically like is that when you pull up the app and it identifies your location, you can see how many cars are nearby. And so you can estimate, hey, you're going to be waiting 3 minutes, 5 minutes, seven, you know, whatever it is, 10 minutes. And that, again, helps you make plans. So I love it. See, I think Uber is phenomenal. I'm a big fan, and I can't wait till you guys send me the Uber T-shirt.
I think we can arrange that. That should not be a problem. We'll send you some Uber swag is what we call it. So we'll definitely put some swag together for you, Bert.
That's it. All righty. Hey, Steve Thompson, love having you on the show. Look forward to having you back again and talking more Uber.
Sounds great. I mean, that's my life, so I'm happy to talk more Uber anytime you're open to it.
All righty. Thank you so much. Guys, we're off and running. If you haven't checked out Uber, check out uber.com. Get yourself a ride and check them out if you're at an event, look at Uber. Sometimes you can get a free ride at an event and you can really strategize with your parking and all sorts of stuff. It's a great product. Love it. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Scott Zimmerman right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey guys, we are back. My next guest, J. Scott Zimmerman, CEO of Zola, and you can check him out at Zola.com. That's Xola.com. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. Anyway, it's a bold new B2B startup that exemplifies why so many so-called niche industries, back office platforms for yoga studios, dental office, for example, are now receiving big-time VC dollars, huge valuations, and positioning themselves for massive, massive exits. Scott Zimmerman, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. Pleased to be on the show.
All right, so you bet. Now, is the name correct, Zola?
Zola is how it's pronounced, and actually, you're right, it's XOLA.com. It's a word that is from the Xhosa language of South Africa, which is the clicking language. So technically, it's pronounced Zola, but we say Zola, but if you want to get technical, that's where it's coming from.
Absolutely. All right. So just so our listeners in the intro there, I talked about the back office platform. So just so our listeners know what we're talking about. Again, if you guys are running a dental office, if you're running a massage studio, maybe a health club, you're using some kind of back office platform to track your memberships, make sales, things of that nature. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, so I think it's good to clarify because, you know, it is there are a lot of businesses out there and they each have their own niche. And so some businesses cover multiple niches, and others cover just one. And so just to bring some clarity to it, Zola is a booking and marketing software for tour operators, activity providers, tour guides, people that have classes, those kind of businesses. So we haven't really broadened our offering to other kinds of businesses at present. And just to give you an idea of what our software does, because back office can be a very vague term, we basically, Zola's software helps these businesses manage their online reservations to get bookings right on their own website, as well as their back office bookings, meaning people that come in and pay in person or over the phone. And you'll if you think about it, these businesses offering tours or activities, they generally have a calendar. They have to manage their availability, their instructors or their guides, as well as the customers. So our system helps them manage all their bookings, and it syncs with their calendar and their payment processor. So we process all their payments, make sure that we make sure that there's enough inventory on hand to provide that service, and helps them manage their guides and their customers as well. So the whole thing, all in one system.
Gotcha. Okay. So again, if I'm a tour operator, a dentist, a whatever kind of practitioner I am, I can use Zola to as a CRM, as well as a selling tool or a shopping cart, as well as a time management system. The whole works.
Correct. Well, we don't serve dentists, and we don't serve. We're specializing mostly in the tour operator, tour guides, as well as activity provider space as our entry niche, and then we'll broaden to other categories down the road. But so I'll give you a good example. Say some of the businesses we represent, the largest hot air balloon company in the U.S. Is using our system to take bookings through their website, over the phone. We represent, river rafting outfitters right there in the Grand Canyon. Urban tour guides, urban classes. We have served yoga studios as well that are doing classes and registration. Although I'd say that our primary focus is in the tourism industry, or people in offering activities or experiences as their primary offering. And I guess as it relates to the other kinds of businesses you're mentioning, there are other companies such as MindBody, for example, and they're filing to go public here very soon. They have a very similar software for yoga studios. There are other softwares on the software companies on the in the market that are serving a niche industry, and they stay focused, and they actually have provided meaningful tools for those businesses and have grown to be quite sizable.
Gotcha. So is that part of your strategy or business model, is to follow some of these platforms? And you mentioned MindBody that raised like $50 million, and again, they're expecting an IPO later this year. Is that what you plan to do with Zola? What's your thinking?
Well, it's never the motivation or even the reason that we're in the business, or even why we do what we do. Or I would say it doesn't really affect our strategy. I think that incidentally, it's been brought to our attention as a surprise to many people that say that are questioning the size of the market. When you're building software for a niche industry. And I think that those examples serve well to demonstrate that the market is generally, if you build software that truly helps small businesses operate more efficiently or grow more effectively, then, if you build something that brings real value to those businesses, then I think that there's an opportunity as a company to build something meaningful. And so, the primary reason why, my co-founder Anush and I got in this business was really to help locally based businesses operate more effectively and give them access to tools that genuinely help their business. And I think that we've always had a very strong belief in growing local economies and in building tools that help local business owners thrive. So that's really our primary motivation in Zola. It's not really chasing dollar signs, but it's more of an observation of I think what we're discovering is that there is quite a bit of an opportunity here, as we're seeing from our customers.
Certainly, certainly. You know what, and I like what you said there, because so many people have that mindset of chasing dollars, you know, versus delivering value. And you know, and you hear this all the time. You hear people say, listen, if you forget about making money and just serve your audience, serve your marketplace, the money will follow. Now, sometimes it takes longer than we want. Face it, most of the time it takes longer than we want, right? I mean, we want money tomorrow, but it sometimes takes a year, 5 years, sometimes even longer to really serve, you know, deliver enough value in your marketplace to be rewarded the way you think you need to be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that you've said that, you know, I think that you and your partner have a great mindset, because it is really about being cool, delivering value, building that reputation, and then everything else will follow, because sooner or later, Zola becomes the market leader because they've delivered so much value.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, I can't say I've met too many people expressly motivated by money, but I just think if anyone were building software for that reason alone, it would just spell failure in my mind. I just think that you have to be dedicated to so much more than that. You really, you know, I think that we're firmly grounded in building software. Like, we're only as a motto internally is, you're only as happy as your least happy customer. You're only as successful as your least successful customer. And so we really are just head down focused at building software and maintaining really great relations with our customers to make sure that we're all on the right track and that they're raving about what we're building. And if they're not, then we still have work to do. And once we really have arrived at a piece of software that pretty much everyone is just passionate about, all our customers, you know, now it's time to think about scaling it to other destinations and other types of businesses, and really, you know, bringing it to market more effectively.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, because that's really ultimately what it's about. I mean, you know, you said, hey, if you're just building software because you're trying to get money, you're going to fail. I think that could be said for any business. If you're just in that business to make money, ultimately you are going to fail, or you're going to get bored, or you're going to, you know, it's not going to be the thing that carries you forward, because, you know, you're looking at it transactionally versus relationship.
Yep.
Whatever the L-E-Y is for that. Anyway, so you know what I'm saying? And that's really what most people just, you know, they lose sight of that. I mean, yes, money is important. Yes, we all want to be rewarded. Yes, you know, I think it's absolutely, wonderful to provide for your family and have these goals. There's nothing wrong with that. But, again, it's really focusing on the customer, having that, you know, those raving customers. And you see this over and over again, where these raving customers, the word gets out. They become your advocates. They become your marketer, your marketers, and therefore your acquisition cost, your acquisition cost of new clients really starts dropping down.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, while the motivation for us is to build software that brings real value, we are serving customers. You know, every single one of our customers is an entrepreneur starting their own business or having run their own business for many years, and so they definitely have a mind on the bank account and how to either grow their business or cut costs. And so our software at the same time is really focused on demonstrating that kind of impact on those businesses. And that's where it really gets fun, is when, you know, we've demonstrated in many cases for businesses that have used no system, for example. Most businesses out there, you know, are using credit card terminals, they're using Excel spreadsheets, paper calendars or whiteboards. That story is very familiar to a lot of businesses out there. And when they switch to a software system like ours and unify their processing calendar, email systems, and everything becomes unified and just streamlined, we've seen, you know, some providers have mentioned that their revenue has jumped 20% to 30% just by efficiency, or they don't need, as many reservationists, you know, and, you know, reservationists might, not that they're having to let anyone go, but they have just greater efficiency around the operation of the business, to where you could actually just use one less employee, or, and the savings can be actually tremendous if you have the right solution in place. And then even some of the marketing tools that we've released have generated a significant uptick, you know, in online bookings, which are, you know, really nice for a business owner when they don't have to pick up a phone and there you've got an online booking just kind of come in the door. So, you know, the tools we're building actually do save money as well as make the lives easier, as well as, you know, bring up a little an uptick in the revenue. And that's what we're seeing from our customers. That's exciting for them. It's exciting for us.
Sure. And you know what? It's something I want to add to that. Especially when you've gone, as you mentioned, where you're using multiple systems to run your company, you're using Excel, maybe you're using some paper, maybe you're using a smartphone app or Excel or whatever, all these different tools, that's mm-hmm. great. But when you have this unified platform, the other thing mm-hmm. that you have is peace of mind that you're not screwing up, because there's nothing worse. Oh, my, you know, and everybody probably has experienced dealing with somebody who is out there, they're a rinky-dink operation, and they manage their operation like a bunch of rinky-dinks, and therefore, you know, your reservation falls between the cracks, and you have a terrible experience. And even though they make it up, they might give you something for free, or they give you a massive discount, it doesn't make up for that, for the waste of time, the disappointment. So, you know, I'm telling you, the peace of mind has its own value.
Well, you know, and what it does, I think that's a great point. It not only helps those business owners make sure that no balls are dropped. You know, everything is just so much more secure. But it also professionalizes their entire operation. Even as professional as many of these businesses are, I don't mean to suggest that they're not. It's just that, you know, having a very sophisticated piece of software behind, you know, supporting their business, it will absolutely professionalize their business to where, you know, like you said, not a ball is dropped. Everything is streamlined. They're more on top of it. You know, if you're talking, like, let me give you an example. You know, you've got a business, let's just say urban bicycle tour company or river rafting company. They might be serving thousands of customers a year, maybe like anywhere from 3,000 to 15,000, 20,000 guests a year. Now, imagine if and most of these guests, they're taking reservations and payment prior to that person arriving. So do the math, right? You know, 5,000 to 20,000 guests calling you, and that's if you luck out on just one phone call per guest. And then you're taking
right.
credit card information over the phone, and that's 16 digits, yada, yada. And I mean, and then you got to send a confirmation email, a reminder email, a follow-up email, and then rinse and repeat times 20,000. Now you've got a huge pain point there, and our system will just make all of that, you know, it basically automates a lot of those things that you've been doing manually for years. And so that's where we generate a lot of value for these businesses.
I love it, love it. Jay, Scott Zimmerman, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. I love what you guys are doing. Look forward to having you back again.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Really
guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there about taking that pain point and just unifying it. Just get rid of it. Just simplify your business and do it with a platform like Zola. Hey, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be talking about the financial fix with best-selling author David Levine. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys. We are back. My next guest, best-selling author David Levine. He's the author of The Financial Fix and the founder and CEO and managing protector of Investor Protector, the first of its kind web-based technology solution that helps investors organize, control, protect their investment and life savings from potential fraud, high fees, bad investments, rogue brokers, and concentrated positions bad planning, no planning, and sudden changes. David Levine, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert, it's great to be here. Thank you.
You bet. All right, so let me ask you this, because there's been a lot of this. What's that?
I was going to say, that was a mouthful, that introduction, huh? There's a lot there.
That's a lot there. That's right. All right, so as I was saying, there's been a lot of discussion about the stock market being rigged. Specifically, Michael Lewis's book, Flash Boys, discusses how frequency traders have an unfair advantage over individual investors. What's your take on high-frequency trading in the rigged marketplace? Is this a real thing? What's your take?
Yeah, you know, he's a great writer, and he's really on to something there. But in my opinion, it's just the tip of the rigging, which speaks to an underlying problem. Basically, the short story is high-frequency traders are simply taking advantage of a more fundamental problem. There's a spread between every buy and every sell. Every stock has two prices. So there's a higher price that is paid by investors when they buy and a lower price that is received by investors when they sell. And Wall Street's on the other side of that spread. So the real problem isn't whose order gets there quicker, even by a millisecond. The real problem is that there's a spread on every order. And that's a fundamental flaw in a system that was designed long ago, and it's something that I address right in my book, The Financial Fix.
All right, okay. Now, for us who have experience in the stock market, the spread you're talking about is called what? The ask and the bid, right? So there's always that spread, the wholesale and the retail price of that stock. So are you suggesting that we should get away from that wholesale price and it should just be one price, period?
No, I think in all markets you do have wholesale pricing. The problem isn't that there's a wholesale price and a retail price. And this is – you're making a great point, raising a great question. The problem is the wholesale price is exclusively reserved for industry insiders, for Wall Street. And
gotcha.
Us as outsiders, individual investors, are always on the outside. So if on every single trade, you know, if I want to buy, I have to pay more. I never get a chance to be on the inside. I have to wait. I couldn't then say, hey, well, I'll only buy at this price. I could set limit orders, but I may never get filled. I'm at the mercy of this inside price. So what's unfair is the advantage that was given to Wall Street insiders. If there were simply a fixed system where a Wall Street insider, they need to make money, they need to provide liquidity. But when we don't really have the transparency into the spread as an outsider and I'm disadvantaged on each and every trade, that's a flawed system that needs to be fixed.
Yeah. So let's talk about this, because you also said something I thought was kind of controversial, I'll say at the least. So in your book, The Financial Fix, you make a shocking allegation that the financial industry, the regulatory authorities of the financial industry, in effect, are running a protected Ponzi scheme. Now, elaborate on this allegation. I find it fascinating.
Well, FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Agency, the authority that has primary responsibility for oversight of broker-dealers and exchanges, is called FINRA. FINRA was given this authority by the SEC. And what you'll find is, first, FINRA is a membership organization. It is the only of its kind situation where government has given a membership organization. Membership is in like a country club where you have to be a member. In other words, everyone else is an outsider. That they primary oversight over the stock market. So the first issue is you don't see the FDA give the drug companies the authority to decide what drugs are okay or not okay. You don't see the FAA give airlines the ability to make rules and regulations for the air industry. You don't see FTC, OSHA, OCC, USDA. You don't see any other situation where a government agency has abdicated or delegated authority. So what you find are the members, FINRA members, are running the industry. And when you look at the numbers, what you find is FINRA makes more charging fines than it returns to harmed investors. That's the first problem. So in the introduction to my book, on page 13, I actually give the numbers from FINRA's annual reports. These are FINRA's own numbers, that they pay their top 10 executives over $12 million. They fined firms and brokers over $42 million, and they only return to harmed investors about $6 million. So it's 50-some million to FINRA, $6 million to harmed investors. That was 2010. In 2011, it's over $80 million to FINRA and less than $20 million to harmed investors. So when the agency, basically the fox are guarding the hen house, the members fine themselves and only return a little money to investors, you have problem number one. The next problem is you find that bad firms and bad brokers continue in this industry. They continue to generate more fines for FINRA by harming new investors in order to pay their fines to FINRA for the damage caused to prior investors. So what's a Ponzi scheme? You take in money from new investors to repay old investors. When you look at the numbers and you look at how FINRA takes in all this money in fines and harmed investors get very little, it looks to me like a Ponzi protection scheme.
It's interesting. Yeah. You know what? And I was not aware of those numbers, and you're right. They don't make sense because, you know, if you're going to charge or fine a financial institution, that money that you're recouping in that fine should go to the harmed investors. Otherwise, what's the point?
That's absolutely right. And FINRA makes a whole big thing in their annual reports that while we don't really use the fines for we don't go shopping with it, or we don't buy watches for FINRA members. But if you look at FINRA's numbers, they actually would have lost money. They would have had an operating deficit if they didn't take in a certain amount of fines. So it's conflicted. You simply can't have
members. Right. So what you're saying is that in order to keep the FINRA doors open, they're motivated to take in fines, period. That's how they make their money.
It's one of the ways they make their money. They make money charging dues. Well, you're going further down the rabbit hole, which is great because this is all in my book. Think about a large firm. Every firm pays membership dues to FINRA. Every registered rep in the securities industry pays membership fees to be licensed and supervised by FINRA. So they make money. The bigger firms generate more revenue to FINRA. So is that a conflict? Your membership
sure.
dues are higher. So are you treated differently by FINRA because you pay them more dues?
I would expect to.
Right.
Isn't that the deal with any membership? If you're paying a higher level of membership, you expect something in return for that, right?
That's right. So that's an inherently it's a structurally flawed and financially conflicted system. And that's what I write about here, that it's rigged. It's not just the market that's rigged. It's the fundamental system of oversight of the markets. The primary regulator has the SEC, a government agency, abdicated. It delegated primary oversight to a quasi-corporate entity that is bought and paid for by the industry at the expense of investors. And when people want to protest or occupy or rail at Wall Street and they have this general distrust, this is why. Everyone is saying there's just something wrong here, and what I'm trying to do is expose it and say this is what's wrong, this is why it's wrong, but here's the thing, it's easily fixed. This could be solved, investor confidence could be restored, capitalism is great, there's got to be a system, so we could fix our system. But until it's fixed, individual investors continue to remain at a serious disadvantage to these industry insiders.
Right. All right, so let me ask you this, because I know that your focus is on protecting investors, but I want to ask you this real quick. Let's talk about making money. What ideas or what are some of your best ideas to help investors make money?
Okay. The general, the very, very big picture, general concepts. You need to have a plan. strategy. Too many people hear things, read things, and they build what I call the Frankenstein portfolio. They start assembling parts, but they should have an overall plan. You need to save early. There is nothing like time. Many people start late, and I understand you can only save what you can save. But the sooner you start, right, even a little bit, the better you'll be. You need to invest often. Don't wait to get this lump sum and then throw it all in one time. That's just a risky move. And then most importantly, once you have a plan, you save early, you invest often, you've got to monitor your results. You've got to make people accountable for how you're doing, and whether that's doing it yourself or using an advisor or both, monitor your results. So that's one of the reasons why the book, The Financial Fix, part one exposes a lot of problems. Part two is almost like an encyclopedia for virtually every product across virtually every firm, from brokerage accounts, advisory accounts, mutual funds, variable annuities, other annuities. I break down the different types of products, the different types of problems, and ways investor can protect themselves. So Warren Buffett has a great rule number one, don't lose. Rule number two is never forget rule number one. So the best way to make money is to protect yourself, don't lose. And then the book lays out exactly how you can protect yourself and make more money by having a plan, saving early, reducing fees, avoiding fraud, all the things that can hurt you. Turn that upside down. That is how you make more money, removing friction that takes away your ability to grow your investments.
All right, so David, on that we're going to end. I want to thank you so much for stopping by. I really would love to have you back again and talk more about this. I find this fascinating. I love the fact that you've done your homework, you've dug deep, and you're not afraid to say, hey, look, there is something really wrong here with FINRA and some of these other authorities. Guys, the book is fascinating. It's called The Financial Fix. You can find it at Amazon and wherever good books are sold. David Levine, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thanks, Bert. Great to be here.
You bet. Guys, we're off and running. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be talking with Tawana Williams right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro.
And Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Guys, we are back, and I'm excited about my next guest, Tawana Williams. You can check her out at Tawana, T-A-W-A-N-A, Williams.com. Tawana Williams is a Les Brown Platinum speaker, author, TV personality, artist, vocalist, businesswoman, mentor, humanitarian, and CEO, motivational speaker. Tawana Williams, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hello, how are you, Bert?
I'm excited. I'm excited to have you on the show. You are one of those individuals that that inspire millions of people. So I'm excited to have you on the show.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Tawana Williams, your messenger of hope and inspiration. And I was blessed to be born without arms and impaired use of my legs due to the drug thalidomide that was given to my mother when she was pregnant with me. And then my mother told me there was nothing that I could not do. And I had a Grandma Rogers that looked me in the eyes when I was 4.5 years old. And she said, T, you must not have needed arms because God didn't give them to you. She said, nothing's missing. If you don't have it, then you don't need it. So ladies and gentlemen, I've overcome some major adversities in my life. I was gang raped many years ago during a home invasion, raped by my stepfather. I was addicted to crack and cocaine for 10 long years. I've experienced abortion, motherhood, and a stroke. So I know that I'm here to help someone today by helping you overcome whatever adversities you may be facing in your life, and that's why I am unarmed but dangerous.
I love it. I love it. You know what? What a great way to start your day. I'm going to take that with that. I'm going to take that intro that you just did, and I'm going to listen to it every day, because ultimately, look, how many of us think that we're lacking in something? And what a great mindset to say, listen, if I don't have any arms, if I don't have this, if I don't have that, I obviously didn't need it. And if you start with that mindset, your life becomes easier immediately.
Absolutely. My Grandma Rogers did not play with me. My mother didn't play with me. My sisters didn't play with me. They showed me, look, you got everything you need. Now go get it. Go get your stuff. And at one point in my life, I made a conscious decision that I was going to get it and get it done. And here I am today making it happen, traveling all over the country, inspiring, pushing, helping, and letting people know that all things are possible if you believe.
All right, so I got to ask you this, because obviously you're not the person that you are today is not the person that you were a few years ago when, as you said, you were addicted to crack and cocaine. You've obviously allowed some crap to happen. So let's talk about some of your struggles. How hard or challenging was it for you growing up without arms?
It was real hard. You know, society said you can't do it. Society said it'll
right.
never happen. And so, you know, being born without arms, I realized that I had to do some things that other people weren't doing so that I could make it happen for myself. And then I did it. It was a challenge. Kids were picking on me every day, you know, teasing, being teased, being picked on, being laughed at. But one day, years ago, I made a conscious decision that I was good. You know, everything that God made was good, and that included me. And I realized that day that I was going to make it happen for myself, and then I did it.
All right, so let's talk about this. I want to get a little bit deep with you here. Okay, so here you are. You're growing up without arms. And as you said, you know, kids are mean. If you're growing up and you're different, you're going to get picked on. And certainly here you are, you're growing up, and luckily for you, though, you have a grandmother that expects higher results from you, or is giving you a higher standard, and so that mindset from your mom and your grandma is obviously going to help you a lot. But right now, you're growing up, you're going through high school and whatever, and you don't have arms. And on top of that, you've had some other issues. So at what point, what was the thing in your life that clicked for you and you said, enough is enough, I am now wonderful, I'm now good, I'm going to do better? Do you remember that part in your life when you hit rock bottom or whatever it was that made you start thinking that you were unarmed but dangerous, wonderful, beautiful person?
Absolutely. It was in 1991. I had an epiphany. I had a metamorphosis, so to speak. You know, I just realized that, you know, life was better. I could do so much more if I changed some things. And you know, being delivered from the drug-addicted lifestyle and the chaotic lifestyle, that was my rock bottom. I said, you know what? If God, if you, you know, either you can kill me right now or deliver me. That's what my words
right.
were. And that was my mindset. I said, I can't do this anymore. Either kill me or deliver me. And guess what? It was a done deal. It was a wrap. 1991, in August of 1991, that was my rock bottom. That was it. I decided consciously that I was going to make it happen for myself. I started hanging around people that were great, that were doing more, so that I could have more and do more. I just connected to the right people, got me a life coach, connected with Les Brown, who's now my personal friend and mentor, and I just started moving. My husband, he started speaking life into me and telling me, you know, that I could do it. And guess what? I did it. And here I am, you know, 18 years later, making it happen one person at a time, pushing people and helping people. And that's all I know today. That's all I know is yes and amen.
But you know what? And I hope that everybody listening on today's broadcast picked up on what you said. You made a decision. You decided it was time for you to change. It wasn't time for the world to change. It wasn't time for you, for somebody to do anything else. It was time for Tawanda to make this decision. And once you made that decision, everything in your life started getting better. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we all got that power to do that. You know, once we change
yes.
our mindset, our thinking has to change first. That's the first thing I had to do, was to change my thinking. If you do that, good God, everything can come together. It comes together. If you want it hard enough, you want it bad enough, you can do it good. You can do it hard. You can make it happen for yourself. And that's what my decision was. I said, no more, Tawana. It's over. The pity party days are done. And I decided that I was going to make it happen and help people. And I realized that all the things that I went through in my life, the 5 books that I've written, you know, all of the things that I went through, it wasn't for me. It was to help somebody else. Once I realized that, it was a wrap. It was a done deal.
I love it. I love it. All right, so let's talk about this. Here you are. You are in the business of helping other people, mentoring other people, motivating other people. What motivates you?
What motivates me, honestly, are lazy, slack, mediocre people, those who have everything and do nothing with it, those who have that handout syndrome and have everything. That's what motivates me. I decided that, you know what, I don't like this, and I'm going to change it, and that's what I've done. That's why I'm unarmed but dangerous, and that title is so powerful because people think it's a physical thing. No, it's a mental thing. It's a mindset, and unarmed but dangerous. We all have the power to be unarmed but dangerous because I found that you don't need a gun. You don't need a weapon. You know, your mind is your skills, your abilities, your dreams, your hopes. We all have the power to be unarmed but dangerous, literally.
You know what, and that's absolutely, absolutely true. I think that is, again, it is so wonderful for you to have that attitude because, again, you know, I think that growing up with no arms and – as you know, having all the struggles that you did, being addicted to drugs, you know, being raped, being abused by your father, all these things, you know, would give anybody an excuse to have a pity party, would give anybody an excuse to not make something of their lives. And you, on the other hand, said, hey, those are the reasons. I'm going to take all those adversities and make them into reasons for me to write my books, for me to speak to other people, for me to help kids and connect with the world. And again, it's amazing to me, Tawana, that, as you said, everybody has that ability. You know, it doesn't matter because we all have our different trials. We all have our own challenges. And I think that it's just a wonderful thing that you've taken everything that God has given you and just made it work for you and made it a blessing for others.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing my mentor Les Brown told me a long time ago, he said, Tawana Williams, he said, we all have the ability. We're all born the same way, dumb, speechless, and naked. After that, you got to do what you got to do. And I was like, that is so powerful. But you know, one thing I do know is that excuses don't hide. They just reveal who you really are.
Say that again. Say that again.
I said, excuses don't hide. They just reveal who you really are. Dot, dot, dot. I'm lazy. I'm slowful.
Yes.
I'm fat. I'm a mediocre person. You know, we all have the ability to do something great. You know, and my thing is, we were all born to do something great, to help somebody else. So, you know, my thing is, you got to get your dreams done. You got to get your hopes and aspirations tapped into and make it happen for yourself today. You know, today is the day for you to get started.
I love it. Tawana, we're going to end on that note. I want to thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. It's been a delightful, delightful time to have you on the show. Would love to bring you back and talk some more.
Amen. Thank you so much, Bert. God bless.
Absolutely. Thank you. God bless you. Guys, we're done. Great, inspirational stuff by the very powerful, unarmed diva. Again, I love what she said. Excuses do not hide. Excuses simply reveal who you are. And stop making excuses and start taking action. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.